Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So, well.
Welcome along to the latest episode of the Twits Odyssey. I thought we'd have done this by now. I thought we'd be finished, but we're not. There's about 10 pages of the book itself, and then we've got a day in the life of Roald Dahl to do. So I think we're in this until after Christmas, Sam. Could be wrong, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's built up some momentum,
it has,
hasn't it?
We've I think that's various the thing. Aspects. I thought it would have all been about Roald Dahl and how horrific he is and his anti-Semitism. But,
That's what it started as, and then we discovered Roly Poly Bird, and we haven't looked back. Roland Bird.
Yeah, it's got other depths, hasn't it, that we didn't even know about. I saw a little thread on Twitter this morning about the witches and how anti-Semitic that is, and people had done some bullet points about why that's anti-Semitic.
Is that right?
Is there a new film version of it out or something like that? Mm. And somebody had gone back and returned to it, and I'm sure there's anti-Semitic tropes in this as well, but we haven't really scratched that surface too much, have we? We got too into the roly-poly bird. But that's for other people to do, I think. Some people will do a podcast series of all of Roald Dahl's work, pointing out every single anti-Semitic element of it. And good luck to them. But that's not us.
Fine.
That's not
Listen.
Us.
Yeah, we live in a world where there could be a podcast about fucking anything.
This is true. And there almost certainly is.
I'm trying to do a fucking look back deep dive on every episode of Big Break, right? With John Virgo and Jim Davidson. So when you think that we live in a world where that could happen, then a whole Roald Dahl podcast is... Plus, I've got to say, the BBC sounds, they commission... And I'm all for the BBC. We're always talking about good stuff that we've consumed because of the BBC, right? Loads of times on this show. So I'm not one of these fucking nutter conspiracy theorists who think we should shut it down. But...
Yeah.
But BBC Sounds, fuck me. Have you seen the podcast that they knock out, mate? It's unbelievable, right? I was listening to the radio on Friday and they were interviewing someone. He's a famous writer. I think he wrote Shameless.
Danny Brocklehurst, isn't it?
I think it might be him, right?
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of other things. Is there a show called Brassic or something like that? I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I think it was him. And they said, so tell us about... He was on Six Music. They said, tell us about this show you've written then, mate. And he went, yeah, all right, I fucking will. I'm paraphrasing.
That's why I'm here. Here we
go. Yeah, all right, you shut your mouth.
Strap yourselves
in, cunts. I was about to fucking say it. Right, here we go. Tell me it. I will. I was thinking, all right, let me get my head around this, right? This bloke is a BAFTA-winning fucking, like, one of the country's top fucking dramatists. Mm-hmm. The BBC...
I know where this is going. I have opinions
to write,
as well.
Write a fucking program, right? A dramatisation of like rave, the rave scene in the late 80s, right? Which, by the way, I've got to say, I'm getting a bit sick of hearing about.
It's become punk, hasn't it?
It's become punk. And I became sick. Obviously, I didn't live through punk. I did live through rave, but I was too young to be going in that era. I mean, you know, I got all the residual benefits.
You enjoyed the
ecstasy and nightclubs and house music.
You enjoyed the refreshments. Aaliyah did.
And you know, and I suppose the clubs that we all might have danced to in the 90s were like, had that rave culture thing. But, fucking hell, you know, there was a period in the 90s where every second documentary was about punk, and it was the same old faces sitting there going, what you got to understand is, you know, Britain in the 70s was not, it was, you know, cut to fucking the same archive footage you've seen a million times, right? Of people on strike standing around burning bins, yeah. right? And go, Britain in the 70s was a pretty grim place to live in, right? And this was our way of saying, right, we've had enough. And literally everything changed from that point on, right? Mm-hmm. It was year zero. And you're there thinking, I was two, but I could tell you word for word the fucking whole script of punk, right? Because they're all fucking saying it every day on my TV screen. Luckily, that came to an end, right, before we all had to top ourselves with boredom, right? And then, now it's fucking rave. And it's the same thing, because it's quite white and middle class, right? Yeah. No, I've got a problem with that. I'm a white middle class man. But we live in this time of, like, diversity, and we're all trying to be more conscious of investing in diversity and stuff like that, right? Mm. And there was a great... There was that great, you know, Rodney P thing on Jazz Funk, which was brilliant. But that was a one-off programme, right? And it told about a subculture that was just as powerful as punk or rave or anything like that, but it was rooted, really, in the black community, right?
Yeah.
The thing is... All the people who got into taking ecstasy and dancing in fields in the late 80s, right, because it was a very white middle class movement, they are all the people who are now commissioning TV shows, exactly. commissioning podcasts, editing magazines, if a magazine still existed. But that's the generation. So they elevate it because it was their scene. They elevate it to the scene. Mm. That was the defining thing of that era. Well, there's lots of different scenes going on in that era, right?
Mm.
You pick up a copy of The Face magazine from those years, they covered the Summer of Love and rave, but there was a million and one other things going on amongst kids in this country, right? For instance, most of those raves were in the south, weren't they, I think?
No, somewhere in a field
in Hampshire.
Well, the prevailing theory is that rave was massive in Manchester more than anywhere else at the Hacienda, but it wasn't, because it kicked off in Blackburn. And nearby areas in Blackburn, that was where the first illicit raves, I think, went on. Because I remember reading about it in the NME, and it was like, this is all going on. That thing of people just turning up somewhere and then deciding where it was going to be. And it was going on in fucking Blackburn. It eventually got into the Hacienda and got picked up by Tony Wilson and people like that, but it didn't start there.
Yeah, but the raves, as opposed to the clubs.
In the south either.
Yeah, no. Well, anyway... I'm getting a bit sick of it. I'm not saying, I'm anti-rave. You know, there's great things that came out of it. And it is interesting, but it's like, fucking hell, another thing. Anyway, this bloke, right? Obviously very talented bloke, got no problem with him. But the BBC fucking paid him to write a sort of very experimental podcast drama, which kind of enacts scenes from the time, right? Mm. And then they're intercutting it with, also, it's very experimental. I couldn't really understand it. Because we've also got Chris Warburton from Five Live doing actual news journalistic reports about the real things that happen, and we're lacing that through with dramatized sort of semi-fictionalized versions, and the cast we've got is, and it was fucking every top British actor you can think of, right? Like your David Morrissey, I think Olivia Colman was in there, fucking everyone, right? Every famous British actor was involved in this, and I was thinking, wait a minute, it's a fucking podcast about rave, right? Yeah. And the amazing stories. The other thing is, right, if you spend any time clubbing, right, then, you know, you can look back now and elevate and glorify your experience. But let's be honest, right?
Mm.
I mean, Danny Baker's very good about this on punk, because he's very honest about punk. He was balls deep in punk, but he's the only person in that generation going, well, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. There was lots of bands around. Some of them were punk bands, and it was quite good fun. That's it, right? It wasn't like, because everyone post-rationalised it, so everyone goes now...
Yeah, and we all felt we were involved in something, right? We'd had 8 years of Thatcherism, and it was our way of saying enough's enough.
No, it fucking wasn't.
It was a cheap excuse to get off your tits.
You were going into a field and taking ecstasy because it was a laugh and you were young, and that's the sort of thing that you do, right?
Every generation beforehand has enjoyed getting off their tits, and you were just doing the same.
It's not like...
No one who grew up in the fucking countryside and used to go and just get pissed up on a fucking cheap bottle of cider in a field on a Friday night is now making a documentary going, it was our way of expressing our anguish about 10 years of Thatcherism.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
No, it fucking wasn't. It was your way of getting battered. And there's nothing wrong with that. But don't look back and try to make out it was something bigger or more profound than
this,
it was.
This is what I've mentioned before. This is why I've got a bit of a problem with Jeremy Deller, because I think he's a fucking fraud.
Yeah.
And he's into all that as well. He's done that thing on BBC Four last year, which glamorised and lionised the whole rave culture thing.
Well, my problem with that is I enjoyed it because I thought it was a nice bit of storytelling, although it was flawed. It was flawed, right? But it was nice storytelling. But my problem with that was he didn't, in however long that show lasted, once mention ecstasy. And the story of that whole scene is 90% to do with the fucking invention and distribution of ecstasy to young people, right? That is it. That's it. That's how the music came about. That's why they all got together, right? It's because it was a part. It was literally, more than any other drug, it was a party drug. It's a drug that you take and then you just want to fucking dance and have a laugh, right?
Good.
That's it. That's the only fucking thing. And so how he could do it and focus on cultural shifts, politics, and all these, and grand sociological theories, right? Without once saying, basically, someone invented a pill that you took and you just went fucking mental and danced all night.
It was almost certainly because he was in front of a room of school kids. And he wouldn't be allowed to say that in a
but
TV
it's,
show.
It means that the story lacks any credibility. Because that was the only thing.
Yeah.
He's going, it was a rebellion against... He shows this footage of nightclubs in the 80s with the hitman and her, right?
Mm.
And he's going, look, everyone was dancing to crap music in cheap suits, right? Quite snobby. What he means is nightclubs were quite working class. They're middle-class kids who had been listening to fucking Pink Floyd, suddenly discovered ecstasy and started listening to house music. And then it became sort of like more something that we regarded as cool.
Well, rave culture kicked off, what, 88, 89 in this country? I was going to clubs in Sunderland in 89, 90, 91. I didn't go to them myself that much. I went to the indie club. I went to the indie club, the student
indie
club.
Discos.
But Sunderland was absolutely rammed with clubs that would have been on the Hitman and her, and you had to queue to fucking get in them every week, and no cunt was going out in fields and taking ease and hugging each other in the fucking middle of a field in the middle of the night. It was all Hitman and her culture. So it can fuck off with that as well.
Yeah, that's the other thing. People over-exaggerate the extent to which it had sort of went through society. There was fucking loads of people. The vast majority of people had no idea it was fucking going on.
Yeah.
Including a lot of young people. Do you know what I mean?
I would not have had any idea whatsoever where to get some fucking ecstasy from when I was 18 or 19 in Sunderland.
I tell you what I did. When it was like, popping up on Top of the Pops, and I used to buy all the trendy magazines when I was too young to go to nightclubs or buy clothes or any of the other stuff that they talked about in magazines, because I saw it as a sort of a portal to like a sort of more grown-up, cooler world. So I used to buy things like The Face. So I started like hearing about it, but I wouldn't have had any dealings with it. But what I did do was I went to Kensington Market, and anyone who grew up in the 80s in London would have known it, because it was like a mecca that was like an indoor market that sold youth stuff, right? Youth fashion, and sort of place where you'd get a t-shirt, but then you'd get a little fucking chillum to smoke weed in or whatever. And I bought, when I was about 13, I went there with my mum, right? Really embarrassing. You're in there, you want to go there, but you've made your mum come because she's gonna right, you can go to Kensington Market, we'll go there on the bus because I've got to pop into Barker's, right, which was the fucking Barker's was the department store, and then you can go in that place. What is it, the place you like?
Kensington Market. Don't call it Kensington Market, we call it Ken Market, just call it
right. And I tell you what, because you've been good, you can have one thing up to £5, right? So we go in Ken Market and I buy, right, I'm 13 years old, never come near a nightclub, much less a rave or some ecstasy. I asked my mum to buy me a smiley face bandana.
I knew you were going to say that. I was going to fucking say.
Yeah.
I was going to interject and say, can I get a smiley face bandana? And there it is.
That is it. I got a smiley face bandana.
I went home. I tried to work out how to tie it around my head pirate style. Couldn't do it. And then I thought, also, I just don't have the balls to go into school wearing this. So I remember what I did. I lay it out quite neatly on a small tabletop, like a bedside table I had in my bed.
Like
I
a miniature table. Like,
it was like a small tablecloth.
Like a miniature table.
And it was all neat.
Yeah. You could put all your acid house ephemera on it.
Yeah, and my mum sometimes washed it because it might have got a tea stain on it. Actually wash it, maybe even iron it, and then put it back out for me. Where's my rave bandana?
Did you get a little Beecham's cold and flu capsule and put that on it as well? Your rave collection.
That's me rave acid. Me rave acid drug pill.
Drug tablet.
Yeah, so I can't remember why we're talking about this.
We're talking about Danny Brocklehurst and podcast.
And all I was thinking was, for fuck's sake, the BBC, right? I mean, this is a little bit sort of industry, I suppose, but everyone's trying to make fucking podcasts, right? There's too many podcasts. And you, I mean, fuck knows how much that costs, right? Mm. But I don't believe that lots of people are listening to it, right?
Well.
Because it's fucking niche, and you have hired a massive cast of huge acting talent to tell a small niche story written by a brilliant award-winning writer with a cast of like that probably cost you tens of thousands of pounds. Yeah. And for what? To tell a story that we've all heard a million times before in quite an ambitious avant-garde way, right? For an audience of you and your peers.
Yeah.
Dinner party cunts who are all reminiscing about that rave they went to fucking once in Surrey.
I'll add this as well. They did the rounds of promoting this about 6 weeks ago. And I heard Danny Brocklehurst being interviewed on Five Live and probably Six Music 6 weeks ago. So it's clearly not had the listener numbers that they were anticipating for.
And
it.
I'm not surprised because it's fucking niche.
Yeah, they're doing the rounds again with it.
Listen, right?
That's not allowed. Not allowed, right? There's an accepted promotional window around any new cultural product. And that's 2 weeks either side of release.
You can't have two bites at the cherry, cunts, right?
That's what
and
they're doing.
I'll tell you why. Someone's getting a fucking sack over this, right?
Yeah.
Because someone at the BBC sat around with his mates, right? They've gone out for a few beers after lockdown. Going, oh, God, guys, remember when we were really into raving, right? Remember Sunrise? I think it was about 89. Huh, those were the days,
right? Then we went to Goa in 92.
Yeah, we went to Goa. Yeah. Hit the old spice trail. Let me tell you, things did get spicy, right?
Jalapeño.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Jalapeño.
They've all fucking glorified and romanticised their own adolescence, which we all do, right? But the difference with these cunts is to go, you know what? I can fucking commission a podcast on this, and I'm going to get David Morrissey to be in it. I'm going to get the fucker who wrote Seamus to write it. And I'm going to also get the Five Live news team to add some journalistic cred to it, right? And it'll be for guys just like us, right? Guys who really lived on the edge of rave culture.
We are going interdepartmental on this.
Yeah.
And I'm putting the mental in interdepartmental.
He spent fucking thousands of pounds. I mean, not being funny, right? There's podcasts like ours that cost nothing to produce, right? That will be fucking outperforming him by times a thousand.
Yeah.
Right? And we're just a couple of fucking idiots, right?
Yeah.
We're a pair of cunts, right?
doing it down the line between Sunderland and Barnes, right? And we are absolutely crushing it in terms of audience. And this cunt, whoever he is thinking, fuck, fuck. He's waking up with his hangover from the expensive red wine he gets pissed on at night. And he's going, oh, fucking hell. Someone's going to start asking questions about this fucking vanity project that I invested tens of thousands of licensed fee money in.
We've got to get and the it's just fucking going mad. Again.
Look through it. Look through BBC podcasts, right? And I am behind the BBC in 99% of cases. But in podcasts, that is what people generally complain about. Because you think they're putting so much money into the most ludicrously niche podcasts, right?
Yeah.
But in doing so, they are also fucking suppressing, you know, people who are independent and want to go and make
because
their own podcasts.
Because they're putting all the promo might behind it, which they've done again with this thing last week, because it hasn't done the business. So they've wheeled out Brocklehurst again to plug it again to try and fucking
justify the
thing.
We are the con out. If not, we're... I tell you what, if I'm going down, Brocklehurst is going down with me. We can all go down for this. All of us.
I know where the bodies are buried.
And I don't say this lightly, even Aid Edmondson, who's playing a copper in it.
I know where the bodies are buried on this one. Whereas with Top Flight Time Machine, all we know is where the sausage rolls are buried. And it's a very different thing.
Yeah, and good luck finding them, cunts.
What
are you
going
to go when the grid goes down, as Public Enemy are currently singing? Well, we fucking know. And whenever I hear that song, I think, well, fucking Andy Dawson knows what he's going to do when the grid goes down. He's heading straight into those woods to unbury his fucking sausage rolls. he's got no trouble at all. That song holds no fear for him.
That's
Chuck
life
D.
logistics for you. That's life logistics. But, I mean, what was the other one? Who's that Northeast lass who was on Gogglebox and then she won the jungle thing? Oh, what's she called again? Fucking hell. She's on everything.
What does she do? What is she?
She just... I'll put... I'm a celebrity Gogglebox winner. And then it'll come.
Oh, yeah.
Scarlett Moffat, that's her. Scarlett Moffat. Yeah. I'm sure they're doing a Scarlett Moffat podcast where she looks at conspiracy theories.
Mm.
And I think, from what I gather, she fucking ends up believing half of them.
Of course she does.
How is that fucking, you know, responsible public service broadcasting? That's mad.
What? Yeah, I mean, the thing is, right, the BBC, sometimes they break new ground by doing stuff that a commercial sector wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
And then the commercial sector might see that and think, oh, that's good. We should have a crack at that, right? Thank you, the BBC, for breaking new ground. With podcasts, it's the other way around. They're not involved in podcasts. They've seen other people make podcasts and be a success. And they've thought, oh, that's a thing now. We better get involved. Everyone else, fuck off. We're going to use our huge sums of money and promotional power to move in. Right, and eat up huge chunks of this market that plucky independent broadcasters like ourselves have established.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, this is really boring for the listeners.
I'm looking at it now. Scarlett Moffat wants to believe. Conspiracy-obsessed Scarlett Moffat attempts to uncover the truth, but can she convince her non-believer boyfriend, Scott? So you've got Scarlett Moffat, who is a role model for a lot of young people, and she's doing podcasts on the BBC entitled The Moon Landing Was Faked. Royal Conspiracies, The Illuminati, The Loch Ness Monster, The Bermuda Triangle. And it gets worse and worse the longer it goes on.
But that's cheap as well, you know, because the conspiracy theories are a real problem now. We used to laugh at them when we were younger, but now, at this moment in time, conspiracy theories have become, you know, when Louis Theroux was doing conspiracy theories 20 years ago, we all laughed, right? There was no internet, whereas now conspiracy theories are fucking dangerous things, right? Conspiracy theories are responsible for things like the election of Donald Trump, Brexit, and so on, right? They've got and therefore the BBC, they know that it's easy get to, it's like data driven ideas that they've gone right. Yeah. What's popular? Well, conspiracy theories. Every cunt likes those, right? Because they're fucking easy to get excited by. They're populist. And what else people like? Scarlett Moffat, right? So it's like monkey tennis. It's like an idea matrix they've got on the wall.
Okay, guys, over on this side of the wall, on the whiteboard, I've written a list of the top 10 most popular celebrities in the UK right now. And on this side, I've put the 10 most searched Google terms in the UK right now. So it works real simple, yeah? Freddie Flintoff on porn. Yeah? Put it together, make a fucking podcast. Scarlett Moffat on conspiracy theories. Put it together, make a fucking podcast. Right?
Yeah.
But it's cheap because they're not doing public service. They're actually contributing to something quite dangerous because those conspiracy theories have got credibility and traction now amongst huge, huge parts of society.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be using lovely Scarlett Moffat, who knows no better, probably.
Yeah.
Right? You shouldn't be using her to spread them.
Yeah. Paid for by the license fee peer.
Yeah. It's fucking mental. Hell.
Also, as well.
Listen, I'm not saying refuse to pay. I'm not saying you should pull a Timbrel.
No.
Refuse to pay your license fee and instead donate all the money to our Patreon. But in a way, you should. Because, you know, if not, the economy is never going to rebuild itself.
Also, as well. I quickly mention, this has struck me as well today, the latest episode of the excellent Life Goals with Theo Delaney, which we've both guested on, and of course you are Theo's brother. The latest episode is the mighty Danny Kelly.
Danny Kelly, I listened to it a lot this Danny morning, Kelly. Yeah.
And I, you know, when I work at a TalkSpot, I regard him as a pal. But I'm now counting the days until that format gets nicked and put on TalkSpot.
Well, TalkSpot are aware of it.
I'm sure they are.
Because during lockdown, there were discussions between us and TalkSport about them taking the form because they had no, during the bad lockdown, they had nothing to, nothing to talk about, no content. So there was a discussion about them taking a bunch of Life Goals episodes and putting them on TalkSport.
Right, the ones that have been already done.
Yeah, it got to quite an advanced stage where we talked about money, and I think they offered us the equivalent of about £5 an episode for what I consider to be very good, well-produced, well-hosted podcast with great guests that Theo's put a huge amount of work into. So I thought, well, that's a bit of a piss take. So what they'll probably do, which is what happens with these things, is, they'll just steal it.
They'll nick it, yeah. I'm counting the days, like I said. But there you go. This is the Twits podcast on a podcast that is supposedly a football podcast. I don't know where we go now.
Welcome to fucking Media Hour with Sam Delaney and Andy Dawson. Apologies, everyone. We've just been ranting about the fucking media. No one cares about that. What people do care about is the Twits being turned upside down in their home.
Look, I'm not even going to get into that. Have you got anything else about the media you want to get off your chest? Or anything at all, really, that's just dangling around? Because there's no point getting into the Twits now. The episode's pretty much finished. Or should we just wrap it up there?
Well, I'll try and think of something good to say because, you know, that is, like I say, I like the BBC. I think you like the BBC as well. But you can't, it's not like tribal. Everyone's so tribal, aren't they?
The BBC, just the execution's really bad sometimes.
It is sometimes,
that's the same with everything.
What I think is this, is that people, you get a certain type of BBC fan, supporter, who really annoys me because you know it's rooted in snobbery. The sort of thing that when we were kids, in fact, I'll tell you this, when we were kids, because my father was rather more aspirational, let's say, than my mother, right? before I was born, my brothers are all quite a lot older than me, right? So they lived in a normal family with my dad before my dad did the off. And he was one of those fuckers who wouldn't let them watch ITV. Can you believe that?
Oh, no.
So me, that was never relevant to me because he wasn't around. He left when I was like still in nappies, right?
See, because I always thought that was an urban myth that people would say that they weren't let them watch ITV. I thought
But you've
got to
understand, right? That my dad, what a weird guy. They're living on a council estate, skint. On benefits, right? My dad's a bit of a hippie, right? But he's like, no, you can't watch ITV. No. You can only watch BBC because BBC does educational things. So my brothers would tell me these stories when I was a kid, just fucking watching anything and everything, just consuming TV pretty much 24/7. And it would be like a myth from olden times, like in Star Wars when they talk. You fought in the Clone Wars? And they'd go, you know, that when... When Barry was still around, that's my dad, right? When Barry was still around, we couldn't watch ITV, and I'd be like, fuck off. And they go, no, straight up, couldn't watch ITV. because he thought it would like mash your mind sort of thing, right?
That was one of those cliches from the punk documentaries where they would say, oh yeah, well, we weren't allowed to watch ITV. We never saw Magpie. We only saw Blue Peter.
Yeah, yeah. No. My brothers, I don't know how well it was policed or how long it went on for. I mean, to be fair, I think even when my dad was still married to my mum, I don't think he was around much in the house. He was He was out on manoeuvres a lot of the time, right? So they probably did watch ITV, but when he was in, they couldn't. But the thing is that there's this, the BBC snobs, which he, I assume, must be one of them, or he was back then, right? They'd be like, you have to have the BBC, because without the BBC, the commercial sector would only make stuff that appealed to the lowest common denominator, right? Yeah. They would just say, oh, well, I mean, it will all just be bingo and nudity, right? And darts, right?
Where will
and
we get off think. Our supply of Attenborough without the exactly. BBC?
And by the way, Attenborough's the only thing they can ever think of as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Although they'll occasionally say,
more than his fair share on Sky recently as well.
Yeah. Sometimes they say, oh, Bake Off, oh, it's so wonderful, Mary Berry's a national treasure, and it's so quintessentially British. Yeah, well, cunts, it's on Channel 4 now, right? So, anyway, they can't really think of examples, but they think they've got this idea that...
As well as that, Sam, when Bake Off went from BBC to Channel 4, ratings dropped by about two-thirds. Is that all the BBC snobs? Are these people unable to fucking find Channel 4 from BBC 2?
They can't bring
2?
Themselves to what? Look at Channel 4 in case they're exposed to a dread advertisement for a product that's for working class people. But what they do is, right, they say, ah, oh, well, it would all be rubbish if it was a commercial sector. Well, television and entertainment in general was revolutionised in the 90s and noughties by HBO. Fucking purely commercial entity that had existed only to show pay-per-view boxing, right? Mm. And then they thought, actually, let's start making some dramas, but let's make them like fucking super amazingly good and put loads of money in as a gamble. So they made Sopranos, The Wire and all the rest of it, right? And they complete, and now, in the day we live in now, where everyone's addicted to high-end dramas on Netflix and Amazon, Apple TV and beyond, they owe all of that to HBO, right? HBO made it, and not just incredible, and this is true of Netflix and Amazon now, not just incredible drama, but documentaries, right? Really intelligent, fucking groundbreaking documentaries, journalism, all, i.e. all the things that the BBC snob said would not be possible because the commercial sector would automatically revert to making lowest common denominator stuff. Because their snobbery is rooted in the idea that ordinary people, people who aren't like them, people who didn't go to the same university as them, only are too stupid to ever desire anything of any like substance or intelligence. And therefore, you need to have to force feed it like you would force feed a goose grain to make foie gras, right? By putting a fucking hose down their throat and force feeding them Attenborough, right? Because they will never willingly watch anything that is like in the least bit intelligent, right? And HBO, which is a completely capitalist entity set up purely for making money, was 100% for its first like two decades just about showing boxing in return for money. They didn't go and make a program about fucking bingo and nudity, right? They made something like The Wire or The Sopranos. When they made Sopranos, they could have just made a show that was like The Godfather, but a series, right? They made this fucking show that was a nuanced fucking examination of a man going through midlife crisis, right?
Also, the HBO commissions were all things that would never have been allowed to have been shown on network TV in America.
Exactly.
Because not because of the what the subject matter was, but because of the swearing and the violence and the sexism and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so
and
advertisers people, yeah, wouldn't have stood for
telly
that.
For
yeah.
Adults.
Adult so telly for adults.
People
changed everyone's and Netflix, Amazon and all the other subscription channels wouldn't exist had it not been for them. And someone there said, we are gonna treat audiences, mass audiences, with respect by making really intelligent programs, right, for all sorts of different people, right? And we think that it will attract large enough numbers of subscribers and viewers for us to make a huge profit, right? And that was the point at which loads of the BBC's arguments, all the snobs, were going, oh, it wasn't for the BBC. All we'd be able to watch was a ghastly jungle programme with those two Geordie chaps, and they're just eating testicles in a jungle because that's all of the great unwashed want to see. No, cunts. Fucking switch on Netflix or Amazon. Or fucking look at some HBO programmes.
And that is exactly why this podcast is a success. Because we're doing stuff we wouldn't be allowed to do on BBC Five Live or on TalkSport or anywhere else. Yeah. And people are flocking to it in their hundreds with their IFS subscriptions. And thousands. Making it the glorious success that it is. I just disappeared up my own arse there for a second. Look, that's all right.
No, but I mean, you know, I don't want to see the back of the BBC, that's for sure. But fuck's sake, stay in your lane. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we'll wind this Twitter Odyssey episode up, this non-Twits Odyssey episode. We'll wind it up with this tweet we got a couple of days ago when we were going on about pay-per-view football, Premier League. Phil Bed 1 on Twitter says, it makes paying the BBC TV licence easier to justify if you consider it as 6 payments for pay-per-view episodes of The Wall. And there you go.
Very true. I'd fucking pay twice that.
And that ties it all together beautifully, I think. This has been the Twits Odyssey on a football podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks very much. Take the FN, dickheads.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.